Greetings. You're now listening to the most handsome and intellectually superior specimens on Earth. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Starts now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day it is where you are. We hope that you are doing well. We're pleased to be able to bring you another episode of I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It. My name is Fresh, and we're thankful that you decided to join us today. Before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to remind you that if you like what you hear, so please, please, please go to iTunes, Apple Podcast, and rate our podcast and leave us a comment or two. You can also connect with us on our social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. At ICBW Podcast. That's at ICBW Podcast. Be sure to like, comment, and follow. You can check us out on our website also at ICBWpodcast.com. Check this out. We're still picking random listeners who leave comments and rate us on iTunes or connect with us on our social media and share our content. The winners will get a prize pack that includes one of our t-shirts and some other merchandise that I know that you're going to love because, as I continue to say, I will not give you shit that you cannot use. So go ahead, check us out, connect with us, interact with us. We love it. We appreciate you. Now, without further delay, let's get this thing rolling today. I'd like to introduce my partner, who's a connoisseur of all things cultural. It's my partner in podcast crime. Reg, what's up, player?
What's up, Fresh?
Man, I can't call it, man.
Hadn't seen you since the last time I saw you, cuz.
I know, man. I know. I'm looking good, though, man, if I do say so myself.
You're looking fresh, so.
I'm fresh.
Fresh.
Fresh. Yeah. Fresh as I'm is.
Fresh.
I know what that is.
Cool in the game, fresh. Some people on this, listen right now, don't remember that song Fresh by Cool in the Game.
Yeah, they probably don't, man. They probably don't.
So you're that fresh.
Yes, we are. I am that fresh. I am that fresh. But anyway, man, what's going on with you today, man?
Man, I'm ready to talk about the topic today. I think I have a little personal experience in it.
Man, I see you over there getting excited. Ladies and gentlemen, Reg is over here. He's like a little kid sitting in the high chair with his feet swinging because of the topic. It's like he just got a, you know, just got a little happy meal or something because he's so excited about the topic that we're going to be talking about today. He has tremendous life experience in this. You know, he's like, what are we going to do it? 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 Well, today is the day that we're going to do it. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about HBCUs today. Round of applause for all the HBCU graduates out there, students. Again, I went to a PWI. I'm sorry.
Wah, wah, wah.
I'm sorry. But hey, I got a damn degree. You, so, shit. You know, I got a damn degree. So I'm good.
You can, you know, do you.
But yeah, we're going to talk about HBCUs today and the value. We're going to talk about, is there still value? You know, I know people get emotional about their colleges, man. So, you know, we definitely want to talk about it and look at it in a broad context and, you know, just address a couple of things, you know, regarding, you know, the status of some of the schools that are out there, some of the reputations. Talk about your experience, Reg, the history, the lineage. And, you know, some other things as well as it pertains to those particular schools. So the first thing that I want to talk about, man, or I'll let you talk about since you are definitely the resident expert is, man, tell people why HBCUs are so important to you.
Why is it important to me? Well, there is definitely a heritage, a legacy involved with HBCUs. Those of you that know me, and even to maybe new to some, I went to the Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida. And let me tell you what really just quickly about my experience there and maybe why I am such a component, a supporter of HBCUs is my personal experience of learning something that I will never get to learn outside of those doors. outside of those classroom walls is something that is very special. Now, those of you listening, my sister went to Howard. She was actually Miss Howard back in 2000. Shout out to her. And most of my family were HBCU grads. So it's really a part of me. I grew up, as you know, in Sparkle City, Fresh's favorite vacation spot.
That is my new destination.
I grew up there, and really from K through 12 had one black teacher, maybe a 30% black high school and school system. Great school system, actually, in Spartanburg, District 6. But I had the background with my family, my both parents. My mother went to SC State, Bulldogs stand up. My father graduated from Allen University. And I have a list of cousins, aunts, and uncles who went to various schools representing the MEAC, mainly, and some CIAA schools as well. A lot of Hamptonites out there, Norfolk State, A&T for sure, Savannah State, and so on and so forth. Not getting to the names right now. But basically, these schools left really a mark on me that will be there forever. It allowed me to sort of dispel some stereotypes out there, especially with black men. You see your brother with long locks, you know, slouchy pants or whatever, you know, some Tims, maybe, you know, a little impoverished, if you will, and articulate as hell. SGA president, right? It opened doors for me to say, wow, you know what? I met a brother from Portland, Oregon. I met a sister from Houston, Texas. You know, this is how these brothers live and these sisters live and from other places. Just like with any college, right? You meet people from different places. But at an HBCU, man, you're home fed, right? I've experienced in SBI, School of Business and Industry, where I pretty much spent most of my days, 4.5 years actually.
There were talking three, about that other semester.
Well, it was I had to have that extra semester for internships, or whatever. But
gotcha,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Did my work, brother. Did my work. But basically, I experienced from three professors that I remember succinctly that during class or after class, they would shut the door and basically say, hey, here's what you need to do, black man. Here's what you need to do, black woman. It was like mentor-mentee type of relationship in a lot of cases. In the classroom, outside the classroom, on the campus. And of course you had some, you know, some that probably didn't care for you or whatever, you know. But
right.
Collectively, you had teachers, you had professors, you had people. It was a community that cared for you. You know, I'm a strong believer now that there's no way that someone who is non-black can teach me in a way that a black person can. From the standpoint of having your best interests at heart.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what one thing that I felt that, hey, you know what? Here's my elder who is teaching me this subject and teaching me some life lessons along the way. He's walked in my shoes, so he's able to tell me firsthand about some things, some straight up life experiences as a black man. Now, can a black professor do that at a white institution? Yes, but he may or she may not feel compelled to do that. So right. Quickly or so openly without feeling pressure of their own tenure there. So, you know, I think that experience you know, attached to the culture of an HBCU. Of course, you have the sports environment, the bands. You know, that's when I became a man. I felt comfortable around young ladies. You know, is this the whole social scene, if you will, everything that goes into you know, becoming a young, you know, from a young man into a young adult, you know, born into a young adult. So those are some of the things that will continue to sort of rest with me as far as why I cherish these institutions.
Talk about get a little bit more in depth when you talk about the culture there. What part of the culture, other than, you know, being able to you know, interact with people from all over the place, you know, you mentioned the mentoring. Was there anything else that maybe at first glance that you wouldn't think that would be useful to you that ended up being something that you took with you?
Well, I would say that I didn't know what to really expect. 17 years old, dropped off 500 miles away from home, didn't know anybody in the city, and didn't know anyone on the campus. No family history of that at that particular school. So my eyes were green. But from a cultural standpoint, I would say that it was very eye-opening to feel a part of a family. Now, I grew up in a very close-knit family, but that was a point in my particular life where I really felt like there was family. I don't know maybe the best way to say it. However, you know, everyone has their different definitions and experiences of what a family provides. And I felt like to the fullest that from every aspect of learning about, you know, sharing experiences with friends, with roommates, with professors, with, you know, every day is not sunny and shiny, you know, and not every student is an A student. You know, you got, like Chris Rock said, you got, you know, a few dumb ones, a few smart ones, and everybody in the middle, right? You figure out who you are in this particular microcosm of the world, right? It's one campus in the middle of this planet. How do I operate? And how do I operate as a black man that's trying to figure his way, right? How do I tackle what my father has taught me, what my mother's taught me? Everybody say, okay, we've equipped you. Now you go out and you make us happy. You go out and you make the grades. That was something that I really had to sort of figure out, and sort of mix the culture, bringing my culture of, again, I told you, I even though I had a lot of family that went to, you know, my background, my blood, my DNA is in HBCUs, but I only had one black teacher, you know, growing up, and I was in honor, you know, honor classes and a few AP classes here and there. So I had, it was, you know, trickled down to a few blacks in classrooms, and it's just sort of flipped. So I had to sort of learn how to balance. So when you speak of culture, you know, culture is what you do and is how you react to some of the changes and challenges. And in that case, switching from one environment to another.
Well, let me ask you this real quick. What makes your HBCU special? What should people know about FAMU? We give you a chance to just promote it, man. Just put it out there.
I'm promoting my school now.
Yeah, just promote your school, man. You are the ambassador, official ambassador, Florida A&M.
At this very moment.
At this very moment.
I'm the ambassador.
You are the ambassador. What do you want people to know? What are you going to tell them that is going to permeate their spirit and their heart to make them go down to Tallahassee?
Well, you know, FAMU's logo, or their slogan rather, not logo, their slogan is excellence with caring. And that's exactly what they do.
So it's not just a band. It's not just a band, is what you're saying.
It's not just the band. Oh, okay, that's where you would leave me in the band. You know, that's the obvious.
I heard that they got a pretty decent band.
That's the captain. You're Captain Obvious right now. Yeah, the band speaks for itself. You know, rest in peace, Dr. Foster, who really was the precursor for a lot of the stepping and how black bands are today. But, you know, FAMU, since 1887.
What are they called?
I'm sorry?
What are they called? Don't they have like a nickname or something?
Who, FAMU?
Yeah, the band.
The band?
Yeah.
The Marching 100.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Every time I look on the field, it looks like it's about 750 of them.
Well, hey. They used to be larger before we got in a little trouble seven years ago, whatever.
It's tragic.
Yeah. It was a very large band. And actually, you know, the band used to get a lot of props on campus. They would eat first in the cafeteria. Those of you who know about bands and athletes, they get first dibs in the calf. But but basically, wow. You know, FAMU has been a great institution. At least for me, I went to study business, and they had a very unique business school format, SBI. Things have changed a lot since I've been there, but found it in 1973. That particular school, sort of spearheaded by the late Sybil Mobley, who basically did all that she could to introduce professional development courses into the school that sort of helps us in many various ways, preparing us the best that that they could to get into the business world, the corporate world. But FAMU altogether is a very diverse school that has, you know, known to graduate some of the most the most black pharmacists, a lot of educators in the state of Florida. We have a law school in Orlando now. And that law school, check this out, Fresh. In the 60s, the law school was taken over by Florida State, which is just two blocks away from the campus. But now, I think over the last decade, has now revived and has a very nice campus that I visited in Orlando that's doing very well.
That's what's up, man.
But, I mean, I can really go on and on about the school as far as a lot of things, you know, from sports to education, what have you. But great experience, a lot of diverse people that go there. I was surprised to see people from out of the country that go there. I think they sort of represent, 45 of the 50 states that, you know, are representative of the student population there. I can go on and on, brother.
Hey, I know that you are a follower of the of sports, just black college sports in, you know, in general. I think we're going to be talking about in later episodes perhaps some of that particular of your prowess in regards to HBCU sports, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Okay. All right. So he's a man of many talents, ladies and gentlemen. Let's talk about some of the, because I know that you're really connected with the growth and development of not just your HBCU, but all of them in general, and that you follow it closely. What have you seen as some of the challenges that these universities face, whether it be, you know, financial, technological, whatever the case may be? What have you seen or what have you researched, and you know, bring that to our listeners so they can be up on that.
I think HBCUs face a lot of what other non-HBCUs face, which is affordability for students, keeping college affordable, just in general. Remember, these schools were founded for the purposes of educating us. It's like, it's the FUBU of education, right? For us, by us.
You got it, man.
So it's really, that's the intent. And so, you know, even in 2018, bruh, you have students who are still the first in their families, first generation students. So it, you know, it is a gateway. It is a conduit for students of lower economic statuses, underrepresented communities, that, you know, to sort of, that's their educational venue. And so to
the gateway, so to speak.
Yeah, to make that affordable, to keep that and somehow affordable to those communities is, I think, is a must. So there's a lot that has, you know, a lot of fiduciary responsibilities from board trustees, from the administration, presidents, that is a must. You know, keeping costs down along the way, figuring out that maybe we don't need this football team, keeping education, you know, the primary reason. That's why they call it student athletes. It's the student comes first. So making sure that you put those priorities in order. Another thing is really funding out of the 105 or so HBCUs, and most of them are state supported or, you know, state funded. And for those of you that have attended HBCUs, know, and I know it from FAMU, Florida State would get a lot of funding from, you know, state funding for different projects and different programs. So a lot of state supported schools have to fight and have to lobby for the continuation of funding. That's another challenge. Those private schools' endowments is a challenge to ensure that they have a very well-connected network of alumni that, you know, that's able to give, that are recurring givers and, you know, financial supporters. And I would say also technology, bro. We live in a different age. Definitely when I was in school, we didn't have internet when I was in school, right? No cell phones. So, you know, this is a whole day and age, man. Just a new, everything is quick and fast. Sort of keep up with the equipment and the facilities. The technology is definitely a must. It's a challenge. And so, you know, I guess the key question would be, hey, student, why would you not go to an HBCU versus why would you go to one? I think those, if you ask me in 1991 when I went to school, mm-hmm, versus a student today, it may be two different perspectives, two different answers,
right,
to that question as to why. And I think a lot of cases where they're missing out, hell, you can get a degrees online. You can, they're making it very convenient. You can go to community colleges for free in most states.
Right.
And so is really a challenge of the administration.
I will say this, man. There is, obviously for our listeners who don't know, we're based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, Queen City. And, you know, our state has significantly reduced tuition at a few universities, one of them being Elizabeth City State University, which I believe is an HBCU.
Yes.
And this is some information that some listeners may not even know. If you are an in-state resident, you can go full-time to ECSU for $500. That is $500.
You can go there for $500
per semester.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
You can also do that at some other schools too. They're not HBCUs. I'm not going to mention them. But Elizabeth City State University, $500 per semester if you're an out of state student. If you want this information, you can actually go to ncpromise.com. If you're an out-of-state student, I believe that tuition is $2,500 per semester, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm wrong, do the reading your damn self and figure it out.
Yeah,
research. But the tuition is low. It's low enough for you to write a check for it.
Mm.
So when we're talking about access, the access is there. I happen to know as well that Fayetteville State University, also a North Carolina school, also an HBCU, has the, out of the schools that are in the University of North Carolina system, Fayetteville State has the cheapest, or should I say the least expensive MBA program. It is under $7,000.
Really?
For the entire program.
Wow.
So people, if you're looking for a master's degree, looking for an MBA, and this particular program is AACSB accredited, which is the business accreditation that you want when you're getting an MBA. You can go to Fayetteville State, HBCU. Less than $7,000 on tuition. I mean, you're probably going to pay. And this is online. It's 100% online as well. We talk about access. You know, I'm speaking to access and technology. You can go there 100% online. Less than $10,000 total out the door, I'm sure. You know, when you're factoring in books, maybe, you know, a few fees.
Where is that?
Fayetteville State.
Really?
Yes. You can get an
MBA. The Broncos.
Right. So, you know, there are options out there for folks. If you want to try to get the, I mentioned Elizabeth City State University for the undergraduate experience. I don't know too much about their graduate programs or even if they have a large offering. But I do know that they're part of the NC Promise, North Carolina Promise. So, and that Winston-Salem State was supposed to be one of those schools that where they reduced the tuition. But they put up a pretty big fuss about it. And they ended up not being included in that. And there was another school as well. It escapes me at this particular point. But there are options out there for people that want to give you know, school a try. Because quite frankly, man, there are a lot of folks out there that they're not really ready for school.
Right.
And probably shouldn't make a huge investment, even if they can get into some place.
Right.
Like Chapel Hill. And you're going to come to me. I think Chapel Hill costs just about as much as Duke now. But, you know, some of us shouldn't make that type of investment. We shouldn't get that type of burden put on us in the way of loans and things like that. You know, speaking truly about access here, we talk about access. You know, a lot of us to get into those other institutions have to burden ourselves with loans, you know, and another type of debt. So, you know, we don't want to do that. So, like I said, if you want to do the research for your own, I mean, don't hold what I'm saying to be true. Don't let this shit be the internet age where, oh, you said it on the podcast, so it must be true. Do the research for yourself. ncpromise.com. Check out Elizabeth City State. If you're interested in attending an HBU, getting your undergraduate degree, check out Fayetteville State University if you want to get a master's for under $10,000. Do that shit, man. What you got to lose?
What you got to lose, man?
You got nothing to lose.
Yeah, what you got to lose?
But you have a whole lot to gain. So, with that being said, man, what do you think schools should do to heighten awareness? Because this is the thing. Amongst us, they're pretty well known. Because as you mentioned before, historically speaking, these institutions were founded to educate us. So they were the gateway to more opportunity and a better life long term. So what do you think needs to be done? Or let me ask this question. Why aren't these schools celebrated like the Dukes or the Harvards or the Yales, the Princeton, the Ivy Leagues? Or, you know, schools out on the West Coast like USC, UCLA, you know, Cal Berkeley, you know, places like that, Stanford. Why aren't HBCUs who have a tremendous historical lineage, a tremendous product, a tremendous alumni base coming out of these schools who are doing great things, whether it be, like you said, in pharmacy, in business, in education, you know, even in entertainment. Why why aren't they being celebrated like that? It's like, you know, you'll see on social media, and I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, people. I don't want this to be misconstrued. You know, you'll see online kids celebrating because they get into Yale, or they get into Harvard, or they get into MIT, or Princeton, or whatever the case may be, or Stanford. And which is good, because the standards, I'm assuming, I never applied there, I would have gotten laughed out. But I'm assuming that the standards are high, and perhaps that, you know, you have to go through a rigorous process. I'm not sure. But why don't we see more of our families celebrating openly about going to an HBCU? And before y'all start picking and shit, I know that there are some people that do it, but what I'm telling you is that when you say the name, let's just say, pick a HBCU.
Howard.
Okay, let's say Howard. Howard means a lot to black people. Howard rings bells when you talk about that school amongst black people. Even people that ain't never been to school know about Howard. But it doesn't ring as many bells as Harvard. Doesn't ring as many bells as Princeton.
Right.
But and I'm saying, why doesn't it? Where have we dropped that ball? Why aren't we steering our best, all of our best and all of our brightest to these institutions? You know, you think about some of the greatest ones out there. You're talking about Howard and Hampton, Morehouse, Spelman, Tuskegee, you know, FAMU, even North Carolina A&T, man. North Carolina A&T, I believe, might be the most voluminous is in regards to student population as far as HBCUs.
It's the largest in population.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah. I mean, where are we missing? Where are we missing this boat? I mean, if this is again, you said this, Reg. You said this is the FUBU of education. So if it's for us and by us, why are we giving our talent or steering our talent into other directions for other schools to where, you know, I mean, and they're going to be exposed to, you know, to different things and in all likelihood, you know, they're going to lead successful lives, but you can do that out of an HBCU as well.
Right.
So, I mean, I just really want to know, is it another case of we just want to identify with white people?
You know what it is, man. And before
I don't know what it is. Before I give you,
well, you already know. These are rhetorical questions, man. You know it. Before I answer, I do want to sort of, with the FUBU, sort of example that I gave, recognize that most of those schools were not really established by us; they were established for us. And I know the whole "for us, by us" piece. Most of the white so-called abolitionists and philanthropists of that day.
Right.
That's why, you know, Howard was a white man. I think it was General Oliver Howard and Spelman, and you keep going, and they're named.
Right.
Most of these schools are named, but just want to clear that up. But, man, you know the answer. It's, you know, I want my kid to do better, and better is being with white folks. Better is being educated by white people. Better is making sure that, you know, Junior gets a job.
But man, HBCU graduates are out here doing their damn thing, though. I mean, that to me, that doesn't even really, when the rubber meets the road, man, that shit doesn't really bear out. Because number one, living life as a black person, you quickly find out that proximity in any sort to white people doesn't guarantee you shit.
True.
If anything, it makes your life more complicated.
That's right. But do we really live our lives that way? Did our parents and their parents have that ideology? What you just said is true. But let's be real. If you were hiring someone and you have two resumes, one is from Morehouse and one is from Harvard. Morehouse Law, Harvard Law. Typically, in this country, hell, in this world, Harvard will win for the prestige of the school because white is right. Because I want Junior to have a have that on his resume, have that behind his name, because that is, quote, better. And then you get into the whole notion of, well, you know, and quite frankly, a lot of HBCUs need to really update their facilities, buildings and what have you. But in a lot of cases, they don't have the funding, going back to funding and endowments. So when you visit a campus, even if you're a student athlete and you're visiting a campus and you look at their facilities, it's to compare going to Duke playing basketball for Duke versus playing basketball across town with North Carolina Central. It's hard to sort of match up, you know, program to program. Which program am I going to get shine and exposure? I asked recently a little round table with some cousins and an uncle, and I said, the question was, if you had a son who was the best, like number one quarterback in the country, where would you encourage him to go? You know, and then Southern Cal, Clemson, Alabama, those schools came up. Others, Florida, you know, your large D1 schools that have a winning tradition. Michigan, the most winningest school there is. But I said, what about, why wouldn't you send them to A&T? I asked my fellow Aggie cousin. And they sort of chuckled. Hey, why wouldn't you send them to Hampton, to my Hampton cousin? You know, those are the things that maybe we as HBCU grads, to sort of align with what you said, Fresh, is sort of, hey, let's put these schools on the line. Why not recruit the cream of the crop, the brightest of them all? Why not encourage these players, these students to attend and display their talents, what have you? But a lot of cases, brother, it is going back. I know the facilities and things, hey, they're located over here in the hood in most cases. We want our son and our daughter to have something a little more, you know. And you can't fault parents from wanting, you know, for them wanting to have, you know, the best for their kids.
But this is the thing, though, Reg. And listen to what I'm about to say here, because what you hit on just a second ago is a prime example of why we continue to lose. This is why we continue to lose. Just like with anything else, whether you talk about economics or something as, in comparison, as relatively unimportant as football or sports in general. Because I happen to feel like our group economics is a whole lot more important than sports. But right. Let's just take sports. Let's just talk about sports. Black people believe in every damn thing else except ourselves. And we believe even less in the collective nature, or should I say, the velocity of our power when it's collective. Because what you just pointed out is a game changer. The Alabamas, the Floridas, the Auburns, you know, all these SEC schools or whatever. They got our kids, man.
Right.
All up and down. Right. Even playing quarterback. Now, we need to talk about quarterback.
Right.
I mean, they got our kids. If those kids were elsewhere, does it make them any less talented?
Nope.
you know, it's part of the microwave generation. We want that immediate gratification. You know, if I run a 4.240, if I'm 6'3", 225, I run a 4.240. It doesn't matter if I'm at Alabama or if I'm at Alabama A&M. I'm still 6'3", 225, and I run a 4.240.
Right. And
but let me finish, because this is important. This is important. The fact of the matter is that I think it is a, and I hate using the word conspiracy, but I do believe that there, in a covert manner, there is some type of movement to discredit smaller schools, whether it be, you know, smaller conference schools, you know, and I'm not just talking about black schools, but you know how they say, you know, if white America catches a cold, black America catches the flu. But I think that there's a concerted effort on these D1 schools to minimize the coaching, to minimize the facilities, to minimize the competition. But the reason why the competition is on the level that it is on at D1 schools is because of our kids. Those are our kids, dude.
Definitely.
So if we take those away collectively, emphasis on collectively, then that particular power falls. We get that back. You know, and it, like I said, we put value in NCAA Division I national football champions. And I'm just using football because that's where we were. We put value in that. But it's not the value. Dude, look up the history of how long college football was segregated. They didn't even want us to play because they knew when we got there, we was going to take shit over. And that's exactly what the fuck happened. But this isn't necessarily a call to action per se, but we want to provoke thought. If enough parents say, hey, look, I'm going to send you to this coach here because he is a qualified coach. Most of these guys, they have master's degrees in education, political science, organizational management. These are well-trained, educated black men.
Right.
These aren't dudes that are just came off the street coaching Pop Warner and shit. And as far as facility goes, man, if I'm benching, you look at the combine, NFL combine. They do some shuttle shit, running, they jump, they bench press, they weigh you, they measure you. Okay. If I can bench press 225 pounds 30 times, the weight doesn't change just because it's at A&T. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
The weight doesn't change. The weight doesn't change. So it's, I guess what I'm saying, man, if you have a son, if you have a daughter that's involved in sports, consider these schools. Because in some regard, whether it's through the psychological turmoil that black people have gone through over the past 200-300 years, whatever the case may be, we have made a mass exodus away from these schools when it comes to sending our best and our brightest. We still get some of them now. I mean, don't get me wrong. Don't get shit twisted up. We start pointing out every little person here and there or whatever. I don't even get involved in that shit. But you know what the fuck I'm saying. We need to start funneling our best and our brightest back to these schools. But we won't do it.
It takes an individual, you know, for each household, it takes just that mentality, bro. What you're saying is absolutely correct. And I wholeheartedly agree, but it takes an individual. I mean, you have some HBCU grads that say, okay, I don't think I'm going to send my daughter there because, I remember, you know, being out on the yard and how I hollered at some girls, right? Well, your daughter's is going to go through that wherever she go. I mean, like, I just don't see.
She could end up on Stanford's campus and get raped.
And get raped.
And then the rapist doesn't even go to jail.
Okay.
Or does minimal time.
There we go. What you said is just point on, brother. I think it just takes the person, that family, that mother, father, team to say, hey, this is what I want to do, and this is why. As long as it has, you think it's going to be the best for your child, whatever program it is. But I definitely encourage it because of the experience. I've had people say, well, why would you encourage someone to go there? Or why did you go? Because the world is not just black. The world is diverse. So why don't you go to a school that is more diverse, that has, you know, Asians and whites and blacks and Latinos and so on and so forth. And I just sort of flipped it on that person and say, well, that's exactly why I won't have that experience once I finish and once I graduate, you know, to have, like I said earlier in the program, to have a professor to say, hey, man, you need to get your shit together. And you're a black man out here in this world. And here's what I went through. You know what I'm saying? I won't get that mainly at a PWI. I don't expect to get that. Hell, you talking about football. Look at how the University of Missouri, I think it was 2 years ago, what they went through. They boycotted because the president of the school had some racial epithets, and they basically sat out. Some white players, but mostly the black players, sat out. And I think it was the, correct me if I'm wrong, but the school was gonna lose like $1 million at the next home game. So the president resigned. So the power, see, the power that the students had. Now that wouldn't happen at HBCU. I mean, that alone.
I do believe that there was, and again, to our listeners, you know, don't take what I'm saying as law, because I'm drawing upon flash memory here. I do believe that the students at Grambling actually perhaps refused to play because of some conditions. The facilities and things like that. Which shows the power of collectivity. But what I need to get across again, and we're going to be closing in just a second, that if your son or your daughter is good, she's going to be good, or he's going to be good no matter where they go. If we want to try to help these schools, and I guess we could say our schools, even though I went to a PWI, I mean, it's for us. You know, if we want to change those circumstances, we need the best and the brightest to go there. Because if you win, you get paid.
That's right.
If you have the best chemistry program, you get the most grant money, or whatever the case may be. If you're a winner, you're going to get paid. Doesn't matter what the field. But yet we're sending ours to other places where they may not even get the attention. They're not going to get that mentor that you were talking about. This is, hey, man, come here. Let me talk to you.
Right.
This is what you need to do. And you're bright, but you're stupid. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, what are we really doing? And before I get, I know a few Duke alumni. I know a few Harvard alumni. And if they're listening to this, pipe the fuck down. It's not an attack on you. This is more about us. You got what you got. You have what you have. You're healthy and happy. But there's still a faction of our community that still needs help and needs to be built. So, you know, be happy. I'm proud of you. Proud to know you. Anyway, Reg, what are your final thoughts on that?
Well, I like with your final thoughts. I wanted to just sort of piggyback just real quickly in regards to attracting the best and the brightest. When you parents, when you send your kids to an HBCU, that exposure, whether they're an athlete or not, that exposure is also going to pump money into those schools so that they can, right? Those facilities can look better. They can attract better administration and teachers and professors. So it all links together, but it starts with that decision to say, hey, I want to do this. Sure, you want the best for your child, but hey, I want to send my kid here. I want to send my child to this HBCU because in the long run, it's going to help that school, those schools that really need the most help, right? Right.
Because you can't tell me, man, and just as for, let's just say for, let's just take basketball, okay? You can't tell me that, say, for instance, I'm the father of the number one basketball recruit in the country. Okay. And I say my son announces that he's going to Hampton.
You're going to shake the world.
Right. You're going to shake up the world. Because now this is the thing. You know, you and I both are collegiate basketball nuts. So, you know, we know the history. We know everything. March Madness on this podcast is going to be off the chain. I can promise you that. Especially if Louisville meets North Carolina.
Louisville?
Yeah.
They have a team?
Yeah.
They're back?
But anyway. Money Cash Hoes University. That's what's But anyway, if your son is the number one recruit and he decides that he goes and that he wants to go to Hampton, it'll shake up the landscape. Primarily, number one, because Hampton has already done well.
Historically,
with
yes.
With what they have. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, they've been to the tournament, you know, consistently. They've done well. The fan base is rabid. I mean, dude, I'm telling you. I know some people from Hampton. They are freaking obsessed with Hampton. Hampton, everything. Hampton all day, every day, all the time. And I say that to lead to the point where it meets two criteria of some of the larger schools. Success, support, they travel well, they graduate players. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the profile of what a quote unquote big school is supposed to be doing. And it's already being done. So the foundation is there. This needs a little bit more push.
Right.
But we keep steering our kids in other directions, thinking that the grass is greener on the other side.
Going after that bag.
Going after the bag or whatever. But I'm telling you, man, if all these one and done kids are going and making their name at these smaller schools, it's going to change the game. We're the product, people. We are the product. There is no game without us. This is what you need to realize. This is why I'm not watching the fucking NFL this year, but that's another story.
Wow.
For another time. I boycotted that shit last year.
Okay. Hey, I didn't know.
You know what I'm saying? I had to hear about shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, had to hear about the Super Bowl, had to hear about all that shit.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, I don't fuck with the NFL. And just real quick before we get out, I know this is an HBCU episode, but the reason why I don't fuck with the NFL is because when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, all of you motherfuckers should have been kneeling with him. Not some of y'all. All of y'all motherfuckers should have been kneeling. So since you guys decided that you didn't want to do that, I take my business elsewhere. I'll watch motherfucking bullfighting at 3 o'clock in the morning on ESPN before I watch the NFL. I'll watch fucking water polo before I watch the NFL.
Damn.
You understand what I'm saying? I'll watch cricket on some of these on
his brother said cricket.
I'll watch cricket on some of the Indian channels on my Fire Stick before I watch the fucking NFL again.
They rather us tear a knee than take a knee.
Right. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just run, yeah. Nigga, run.
Run, nigga.
You know what I'm saying?
Run.
But anyway,
make that money.
Make that money. So yeah, man. Hey, we appreciate everybody listening today. You know, we kind of, you know, as you will find out, this is kind of what we do sometimes. You know, remember when I told you in the preview episode that we do this shit all the time? This is kind of how our conversations go sometimes. But I believe that you definitely have gotten a lot of information about where we stand on this particular issue. You've definitely learned about Reg's, you know, illustrious family history in regards to you know, HBCUs and the contributions that his family has made to, you know, to society thereafter, really deep in education. And he's very proud of that, and I'm proud of it too. Proud to know you. So any last words, Reg?
Be good, be safe, and behave, brother.
And we out.
I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should probably hurry, it gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should hurry up, it might get crowded. Bring a friend with you. Expression Reds, their curators are cool. With culture and consciousness brought directly to you. Tune in every week for the newest anew and occasional politics as it pertains to you. Divergent point of views make for a whole picture, and we suggest you get your money up and take the shit with you. Ain't no fountain to you, but it's a secret elixir to ensure the black man as a permanent fixture. Standing here in America behind enemy lines, where more often than not my skin's considered a crime. Cops kill us daily and will never do time, while a crooked ass justice has the fate for mine. One day at a time is what my mama would say. And since mama said living ain't no time to play, and since I got a little game, I'ma give it away. But let's start the show before I get carried away. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should probably hurry, it gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should hurry up, it might get crowded. Bring a friend with you.
You just tuned in to I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It, hosted by Fresh and Reg. Holla back next week.